At 6:20, this is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. North Texas is sweating through its second straight record day of heat. Today's high of 108 makes this the hottest July 20th ever in Dallas. Wichita Falls also blew away at its daily record with 112 degrees. The National Weather Service says the heat wave should peak tomorrow, when Dallas could make it to 110, but highs should ease a bit down to 100 or so by the middle of next week. Dennis Kane is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Fort Worth.
It's been worse back in 2011. That was a much longer, much more prolonged heat wave. And then for the older folks, you go all the way back to 1980, and that was the benchmark as far as heat waves are concerned here, at least in North Texas.
In 2011, highs in Dallas-Fort Worth topped 100 every day for more than a month, and that summer of 1980 was even more brutal, with three straight 113-degree days. Meanwhile, even more records being set as Texas battles the heat. The Electric Reliability Council of Texas said power usage set all-time records twice yesterday afternoon, breaking previous records from Wednesday. Think the heat is tough? Now, imagine what it's like for pregnant moms. KERA's Courtney Collins knows. She's 6 months into her second pregnancy, and she reports that misery is backed up by science.
Traversing a Dallas parking lot in July is not a journey for the faint of heart. The heat radiates off the pavement, and you can feel your scalp start to burn in seconds. Now imagine the trek with an almost four-year-old named Bobby and a two-and-a-half-year-old named Kate. Also, you're 25 weeks pregnant.
It's like you're walking on the sun, and kids don't move very fast, and so I hate rushing them, but I'm just like, and then the car is even worse when you get in the car.
Rebecca Mayberry has a preschooler, a toddler, and baby number three is set to arrive in early November. She and I are both due this fall, and we happen to agree that no matter where we've tried to hide this week, the heat manages to find us.
It's just kind of inescapable unless I have a fan in my face or I'm in water.
Every trip outside feels like a marathon training session, and we shrink back from the forecast in terror.
Weather headlines, yeah, this is record-breaking heat, an excessive heat warning remains in effect. This one,
and we aren't the only pregnant women clutching iced tea like it's the elixir of life. Dr. Robin Horsiger-Bear with UT Southwestern says a heat wave is more challenging with the baby on the way. It's science.
Pregnancy tends to be a state of vasodilatation. Your blood vessels are bigger, they're swollen, your blood volume's increased. That in itself causes women to be a little bit warmer than normal.
And she says many of her patients are finding that out the hard way.
People never, ever think about what the weather's going to be like when they're pregnant. And that's what you hear, though. If I had known, I might have timed this differently.
And with an even hotter weekend on the horizon, Rebecca Mayberry says she's running out of creative ways to entertain her kids and not risk heat stroke.
We go to the pool a lot. We turn on the sprinkler in the backyard a lot. I let them ride their scooters in the house.
Because when you're nearly 6 months pregnant and the temperature is threatening to hit 110, an indoor scooter halfpipe doesn't even seem that unreasonable, as long as the AC's on. Courtney Collins, KERA News.
Here's a fact. Today's high was 108 degrees in Dallas. And here's an opinion: you should probably move to another state. But figuring out what's fact and what's not in the news is a challenge to the majority of Americans. That's according to a new study from the Pew Research Center. Jeffrey Gottfried co-wrote that report. Today on Think, he told Chris Boyd about a survey that asked respondents to mark whether a statement was a fact or an opinion.
What we saw overall is that the political appeal of these statements did affect the responses of both Republicans and Democrats. And so specifically, both were more likely to label a factual statement and an opinion statement as factual when they appealed more to the political side. So for example, if a Democrat saw a statement, a factual statement that would appeal more to their side, they were more likely to call it factual. Now, on the other side of that, a Democrat who saw an opinion statement that appealed more to their side, they are more likely to incorrectly also call it factual.
You can find a link to the study and subscribe to the podcast at think.kera. This episode of Think re-airs tonight at 9. The United Nations says 65 million people around the world were displaced at the end of 2015. It's hard to comprehend the number of forced migrants and still recognize the individuals. That's at the heart of an exhibit at the Fort Worth Community Arts Center. In our weekly State of the Arts conversation, KERA's Ann Bothwell talks with artist Bernardo Valerino about trying to express the refugee experience.
Bernardo Valerino, welcome to KERA.
Thank you so much, Anna. I appreciate you.
These pieces are huge. They are banners mm-hmm. with the Spanish phrases on them, like no más and tú y yo. And when you get up close to them, you realize that these words are made of tiny stamps of human figures. Can you tell me what inspired this?
Within my body of work, I try to work within a macro and micro context. In other words, when you are far back, you're able to see and experience the artwork in one way. And then as you get closer, you'll get more information. So in this case, then you have the large banners with the large words like tú y yo, no más. But as you get closer, then you realize that you're not looking at shadows or dots, but rather humanoid forms.
What do those forms stand for?
Individuals, but at the same time, individuals without an identity. So they are blank forms for you to be able to empathize with.
You're making these stamped figures, and instead of dipping the stamp in ink, you're using sacramental wine.
Correct.
What does that signify to you?
Originally, I wanted to use human blood. I wanted to be fairly blunt on what I was trying to say. But getting a hold of human blood is very difficult. And using my own blood would just kind of talk about a self-portrait. And that's really not what I wanted to do. So within a conversation with a group of friends, the idea of sacramental wine came about. And of course, it would be extremely difficult to get a hold of that material. But through the conversation, somebody had a heart for what I was trying to say. And a few weeks later, I actually had a box in my mail that had the wine in it and said, you know, for this purpose, for this artwork. So I ended up able to have the sacramental wine.
And what does that signify to you?
As a Christian, as a Catholic, it is the blood of Christ for us, right? It is this context of humanity, but also the cleaning of sin. It switches back and forth, I would say, the context of the words, like you and I. So when you have you and I placed within in the context of sacramental wine, what is it saying now? How are you connecting to you and I? As you get closer and you understand the material and you really study the piece, then you get into those really nice areas of the artwork that I'm hoping people can see if they really choose to see them.
One of the things that's so striking about these thousands and thousands of small figures, it almost seems a metaphor. Are you trying to say that we're not seeing people as individuals? Or
in many ways, yes, definitely. One of the things that I also want to point out with this whole body of work is the fact that when you take an individual element and you put it in a context of a lot, that individuality gets lost. Its value gets lost. So just like the context of quote-unquote refugees as a whole. But when you get closer, when you start studying the individual, then you realize there is something much more special about that individual.
And you have a piece in the show that specifically addresses the refugee experience. Can you describe that?
As I was working with refugees, one of the things that I heard a lot about was a connection to those left behind. Now, I myself, coming from Colombia, completely understand that, but it was highlighted as I did those interviews. So it is another protest banner that reads out Sin Ti, which means without you. And the way it works is we have the refugees, or not all refugees, but the migrants coming in and put in the names of people who they left behind together with stamps and then stamp directly within those words. So at the end, we will have the word Sin Ti filled with a memorial of people, basically, that were left behind, whether they're family, friends, neighbors.
And these are called protest banners. Are they actually going to be used in a protest?
Yes, they are protest banners, but I do think that the protests can be done inside of the building just because of the reverence that the material requires.
Bernardo Valerino, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Anne.
The exhibit runs through July 27th at the Fort Worth Community Arts Center. On Saturday, refugees will give testimonials about their experiences. For details and photos of Valerino's work, visit artandseek.org. And an excessive heat warning remains in effect until Sunday. Otherwise, clear skies tonight, should be a low around 84. Tomorrow, sunny and hot, with high around 110. At 6:30, this is KERA News.